Hello, I have a little song. I heard there was a secret food that when you ate could make you poo, but you don't really care for spicy, do you? Put them on my nachos, please, and when you do, don't forget the cheese, my favorite little pepper, jalapeno. Jalapeno, 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 jalapeno. Love the show. Power out.
TBTL.
What will your first sequence of the day be?
Computer, load up Celery Man, please.
He is a fan of the outrageous. He loves to surprise. He loves other things as well.
You guys are so fun. Just relentlessly fun. I keep thinking, when are they going to stop being fun? And the answer is never.
That was great. That was good. You went for it. I appreciate that.
What do you say we go out and get some Carvel?
I got the time if you got the diapers.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Oh, la, la.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
Coming to you from the Beverly Hilton in Beverly Hills, California, perched above Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to the program. It's episode 2786 in a collector series. And I want to get corrections from the listeners because I know that Beverly Hills is its own city. I learned that in the documentary Beverly Hills Cop 1 through 4. So it's technically, we're not in Los Angeles right now. We are in Beverly Hills. But if you email me to correct me that, I will know you are very rich. Because you live in Beverly Hills, and I will ask you to donate more to the TBTL-a-thon. So don't even think about it. Save yourself the financial hassle by not correcting me on that part of the show. We're off to a hot start.
Jalapeno!
Aren't we, everybody? What are we going to talk about here on this Wednesday edition of the show?
Well, let the fun begin.
I went to Moby's, a vegan restaurant here in L.A. yesterday.
Is this organic?
And I have a, I've got a full review of my experience there. It was, well, I'll tell you about it when we get to that part of the show. Let's just say it didn't disappoint. Did not disappoint on a variety of levels. Speaking of being a kind person to the animals, you know, we say a lot of things where we mention animals, things like...
Early bird gets the worm, but who wants to live on worms?
And PETA now says that some of these things that we say are essentially anti-animal. Things like kill two birds with one stone. I'm going to tell you what they are proposing. And also, this is in the category or the possibility of spoiler alert territory. But, like, I did not want to do this story to make fun of PETA. I actually think they might have somewhat of a point. But I don't know if I'm going to start saying... Feed two birds with one scone instead of kill two birds with one stone. I'm not a bird killer by nature. I'm not into that. Again, I think they might have a point, but I think they might need to come up with some better alternatives, some alternatives that we might actually say as normal humans. So anyway, we'll talk about that too. Plus, we got some emails and V-mails, and we have this guy, longest running Cobro of the show. He's a guy that I can get into. He's doing the work. He's baby stepping. He might have tacos for dinner. He's not quite sure about it. And I'll tell you what, he is looking for friends. If you are, if you're interested, if you've got the time, if you can reach out, here's how you get a hold of him.
I'm Andrew at tbtl.net, and I'm super lonely.
He is in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He joins us right now. Good morning, my Cobro.
Good morning, Luke. Good news. Good news for everybody. Did a last minute check on my email before we started the show to make sure there wasn't any late breaking news. Turns out there is. I got a release
Single
here.
Christians, good news.
This Keep is going. For immediate release from luxury lifestyle showcase and exhibition. The Luxury Artisans converge at Luxuria, the luxury lifestyle showcase in Beverly Hills on December 9th. Look at your calendar, my friend. That is just around the corner. This is a presentation of innovative boutique brands representing the future of luxury. And it's right there in Beverly Hills, California, where you happen to be right now.
God, I mean, you know what? I'm going to change my flight. I'm supposed to fly back today, but would you be cool just handling the show solo for the next few days? Because
I would love to.
This is one of those once-in-a-lifetime chances. That, speaking of that California lifestyle and that stereotypical Los Angeles experience, I went to this thing yesterday, and I went on just a long, as I am wont to do, I went on a long journey in my heart, in my mind, with my ego, Andrew, with my insecurity. I mean, that's just usually called Tuesday for me. But this one was, there was a specific reason. I'm doing this story, I'm down here doing this story about pop-ups, which are all the rage right now. And I went to this one yesterday. There is I don't know if you call it a luxury brand, but there is a fashion brand of sorts called Refinery 29.
Oh, yeah.
And if I can understand what they do, it's they sort of curate things. They sort of a lifestyle brand, I think, for particularly for women. And there's a lot of fashion involved. There's a lot of it's sort of an aspirational thing. I think you go there much the way that I go to Dwell Magazine to look at beautiful houses and get tips on how I can try to make my house more beautiful. And, you know, I think it's somewhat curatorial in its nature. They just are good at, as they would say, refining and distilling down all the stuff on the internet has to do with fashion. Again, things mostly focused on stuff for women. They put it all together, but they have this other thing called 29 Rooms, and this is a pop-up. And yesterday I went to the media preview here in L.A., and I walked in, and I was easily 20 years older than the oldest other person there. And this thing was designed almost exclusively, I thought, for influencers, for the generation and the media creators who are, you know, probably mostly, I would say, between 20 and 30. There was the unironic use of many a selfie stick for people who are creating, like, shows. Like, I'm sitting here in a hotel room talking into a laptop, so I'm not trying to act like I'm a media mogul and someone who's using a, like, really expensive phone or maybe even a digital camera of some kind on a stick. Like, they're not creating content, because I could have just as easily been walking around that thing talking into my phone for TBTL. So I sort of get that comparison. But, man, it hit me right where I live when I walked in. I wanted to turn around and walk right out. And I went downstairs. Oh my God, I can't believe this. Of course I'm getting into this now. I was on the second floor of this like kind of designy building in downtown LA. I walk in, there's just a scrum of like 20 very beautiful people, primarily women in their early 20s. They're standing in front of the entry, which is this like very shiny, very Instagrammable thing. And they're all kind of they're doing all of their selfies, and they're doing their little reports for their little report sounds dismissive. They're making their content, right? But it's the kind of content that feels foreign to me.
Mm-hmm.
I got back in the elevator. I went downstairs, and I went and I sat at the coffee shop, and I just thought, what would George Plimpton do if he was at this thing? I was like, I am out of step with what is happening here. And I even,
that is
like,
such an improvement, though. A few years ago, you would have said, what would Hunter S. Thompson do? And I just feel like you're growing so much, and I'm proud of you, buddy.
I am so good at working my way through white male journalism models. So I went downstairs, and I just kind of thought, well, the first thing I did was I took a picture of the place, and then I wrote a snarky tweet, which I sort of immediately regretted, which was something like, please don't tell these influencers that my Finsta has been less than fire lately. And which was a completely coming from a place of insecurity for me as a way of trying to get control of the situation and be like, I'm above this. I'm better than all of these people because I do a podcast, you know, but it just made me feel, I had this really strong negative reaction. And I had to kind of ask myself, God, why are you having this feeling? So I ate some avocado toast. That's not a joke, Andrew. I ate some avocado toast. Maybe that was the bridge. Maybe that was me trying to get in touch with the millennial generation.
Like taking acid when you're covering Timothy Leary. You just need to get there. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So I sat down, I ate some avocado toast at the coffee shop, and I just kind of thought about it. Okay, like what, you know, what am I doing here, and what can I learn from this experience, and what can I relay later through the TV thing I'm doing, and I guess TBTL, although at the moment I wasn't thinking about this as a topic for our show. But so I went back upstairs, and then the thing that was also kind of crazy was the overlap of major corporations and things that are about social justice and women's issues was sort of incredible. And like there one of the rooms was sponsored by whatever pharmaceutical company makes the morning after pill. There was Plan B phone booths where you could sit and listen to recordings of women talking about emergency contraception, sponsored by the company that makes the morning after pill. There was a booth or a kind of an art installation sponsored by – these are all art installations if you're trying to think of what I'm talking – if you're trying to picture what I'm talking about. There was an art installation that was sponsored by Pantene shampoo. There was – and that was a – you know, some kind of thing about getting – kind of making your hair beautiful at the last moment. There was a room that was – celebrating African American women. There was a room that there was a kind of like what you'd think of, like, for lack of a better word, almost like a firework stand, but it was the take a stand room where, and it was all the things they sold were basically issues pertaining to women. So it was like a very woke environment, but it was the intersection of wokeness and commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And all under, I mean, a trans choir performed a song, Andrew. A trans choir performed a song. Like, it was, this was an extreme, it was beautiful too, by the way. It was like my favorite part of the whole morning. But it was like a very woke environment, but it was also, like I said, underpinned by commerce. And I am a little proud of myself that I was working hard to, like, not just relax into my normal preconceived notions about everyone in the world who's not me. And so I ended up talking to the woman who was one of the founders of this thing. And I was really impressed. I mean, I asked her all of the questions that were coming to my mind about, like, well, how do you, like, square these things, these important issues, with, like, the fact that it's sponsored by MasterCard or something, you know? And she had really good answers. She was like, yeah. She goes, I don't know. It's a hard balance. We try to tell people when stuff is sponsored. We're really clear about it. And also, we got to make money. And we also think most people live complicated lives where they have causes that are important to them, and they also buy stuff. And I was like, that's a good answer. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, ended up talking to this woman. It's just very, like, I was just really, like, I had a really interesting, fun conversation with her. And I left kind of feeling like, okay, maybe not everything in there is for me, but that's because not everything in there is for me. But the other thing about this whole, like, phone-based media creation, I was thinking to myself, like, why does that seem so weird to me? Because that's how people are getting stuff now. It's just different. It'd be like at some point if someone was like, why are you talking into that microphone, into that antenna? Why aren't you just like, why aren't you in the down at the, you know, the chapel talking to the people assembled on Sunday? That's how you reach a crowd. Or aren't you standing on the back of a train during a whistle stop tour? What are you talking into this radio microphone for? And it's like, well, I don't know, because it's a better technology for this. And it's like these phones that these people were carrying around are in a lot of ways a better technology for what they're doing. The other thing is 21-year-old Luke Burbank would have absolutely been there trying to media create.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing. I didn't do that because they hadn't invented cell phones and nobody asked. There were no – I didn't – you know, I there was not the opportunity for me to do that at age 21 or 22 or 25. But let me tell you what, if I could have – like, if I was 22 right now, I would be – maybe not 29 rooms, but whatever my version of that is, I would be at that thing. I would be trying to be a vlogger or a blogger or a Viner or a joker or a midnight toker. I would, like – how can I hate on young people who are, like, interested in getting their message out to a wider audience when that's literally the only thing I've been trying to do for the last 20 years? But I'm just using slightly different technology most of the time.
Yeah, I will say, putting the media stuff aside for a second and just focusing on those feelings that you had when you showed up and it was all these, like, super young, super trendy, super beautiful people. You know, people will, you know, a lot of people will complain about L.A. I find the people who hate L.A. the most have never even been there. But there's
very, very true.
There's an adage that goes like, if you, you know, if you're in LA and you hate LA, you're not really in LA, because LA is so big and there are so many different cultures going on that you just haven't found your right corner of the city yet. And I found that to be incredibly true with me. And
your corner was Hank and Frank.
Exactly. My corner was
the corner of happy and healthy.
The corner of the Kibitz Room and Langer's.
God, dude,
Cantor's.
Love that place.
Yeah. But that is the truth. Like, I liked the kind of been around for a long time, hasn't been super well kept up, kind of just old school bars and sandwich shops.
Like,
and that kind
like
of
our bodies.
Like, I got the body to prove it. You think I'm lying? I'll send you some pics. And I like that kind of stuff. Genevieve, while she also loved the Langers and the Cantors, she's much more drawn to the types of places that, even though they were just brunch spots, they felt to me exactly how you're describing the 29 Rooms thing. Like, waiting for brunch in Santa Monica is the bad place for me. Like, in a way, like,
oh,
honestly, like,
this is the bad place.
In a way that I can't even fully explain to people. They think I'm joking or just being over the top about it. I'm telling you, I have flashbacks of, and this is where I'm a terrible person to date or just be around. I have flashbacks of waiting outside on a Sunday during a time when I felt like I had hardly any of my own me time because my job was a little bit, I think, in my head and maybe a little bit overwhelming. So I felt like I had very little free time for myself, and I was spending that waiting for an hour among all these just like incredibly beautiful people that somehow were wearing yoga pants but were still dressed better than me right. In Santa Monica, waiting to get some sort of goddamn brunch that involved an unbroken yoke that I didn't give a shit about. And it just like, and just feeling, I felt a lot of bad feelings about the people who were waiting for no good reason. All of these people were just doing what they wanted to do on a Sunday, which was wait for a nice breakfast that they could Instagram and tell their friends about and have a good time having, you know, nice Santa Monica Bloody Marys with their friends. There's nothing wrong with those people and the way they want to brunch. But I felt so uncomfortable and like such an old, fat, flubby dubby, like looks like he just got off the bus from Ohio guy waiting in outside of these brunch spots. That, I mean, and that was just me trying to get brunch in Santa Monica, dude. Or that time, remember, I went on a whole rant. We had, I think, moved back to Seattle, but then we're visiting Los Angeles. And we stayed in the Ace Hotel again.
Oh, right. The bunch land of, like, of the close toilet.
Yes. And the thing is, like, everybody at the front desk was super nice. They were also super young and super beautiful and super hip, but none of them did or said anything or even give a flip of their hair that would have indicated that they were looking down at me, because they did not treat me that way. Yet I was so goddamn insecure and am insecure in that kind of culture of LA that, I mean, I brought on a lot of it myself, and I disliked it. So you can imagine me at the at the door of this Refinery 29 thing.
Oh boy. Yeah. this would have been a very challenging environment for you. By the way, that is, I'm not a historian of sort of that era of LA music, but I do think that was why Jim Morrison wrote that song, "Waiting for the Brunch."
Yeah, it's
waiting for the brunch.
Do you know that ended up getting changed
like,
in the studio?
He doesn't sing like Robert Goulet, but for some reason, in my version of it, he does.
Yeah,
So that was my morning, and then in the afternoon, I went to the Museum of Selfies to shoot some stuff, which is in Hollywood, which is, let me just say, the end of the rainbow. And it turns out what's at the end of the rainbow is a broken down mini Winnebago parked on a street next to a mattress that someone has cut open with a knife for some reason.
Wait, what?
Have you been to Hollywood?
Oh, okay. I thought this was some sort of like pop-up like art thing.
Well, actually, yeah. No, the Selfie Museum really is it started as a pop-up. Now it's a semi-permanent thing. It's in Hollywood. I did go there. It is in Hollywood. I was just riffing on the larger sense of like how weird Hollywood is as a place.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you haven't spent much time in LA, you might think because of the sign or because of its just kind of notoriety with the film industry that Hollywood is this beautiful, wonderful place. And it is rough. It's just so many people coasted on fumes, literally and figuratively, and were like, take me to Hollywood. And then it's like, and that's where their dreams died, and now they are just scuffling around doing all kind. I'm just all manner of sort of odd job and panhandling and living in, you know. And I don't say this to try to be callous about people's situation if they're if they're unhoused, as I think we now maybe say. But it's just Hollywood. It's one of the places where the difference between what you think it's going to be about and what it's actually about is the most stark and noticeable.
But you would know this better than me. But that has changed a lot, though, because it's more money than it even used to be. And honestly, when you said you went to the place of the selfie or the selfie museum and it was like a Winnebago and an old mattress that was cut open, I was like, yep, that's some Dove Charney shit. That sounds about right. Like that would be the backdrop for these kind of like dirty, you know, you could see those kind of like arty, dirty selfies or something.
No, it's I was mixing two things together in a confusing way. But the selfie museum is on Hollywood Boulevard, and it's actually, I have to say, like, you know, I'm not a big selfie taker, but the guy, one of the founders of it, who I interviewed, this guy named Tommy. He was, I guess, maybe a TBTL listener, or at least did enough TBTL listening beforehand to have some sense of it, which is smart. You want to win me over at your selfie museum, listen to one of my podcasts and reference it, and you've got me. But anyway, made some compelling points about, he was like, look, I know that selfies seem really dumb, but they're actually pretty candid, a lot of them anyway, and it's the evolution of photography. And a lot of people don't have someone else take a picture of them, so they do that. He made this like it was basically what happened was in the morning and in the afternoon, I had two situations I walked into where I was like, I know exactly what this is about. And then I got in there and then I talked to the people doing the thing and I was like, okay, there's more nuance to this than I was thinking. And I just think that's probably something that's happening all the time. I just usually don't investigate it past, here's what this is all about. You know what I mean? I live in a world of judging everything all the time, and I very rarely actually push past my initial suspicion about stuff. And so yesterday was two events where I actually talked to some people and found them to be really interesting, smart people doing things. And again, I may not agree with every single thing they're saying or doing, but it's like there's usually more to stuff than I think tend to think. And I haven't even gotten to the part of the day where I went to Moby's vegan restaurant, Andrew.
Oh, right. You want to talk about that after the break?
I do. So let's do that. Quick break, and then we will be back with more TBTL. Stay with us.
Green Sally up, green Sally down. Last gun start, gotta tell the crown. Green Sally up, green Sally down. Last gun start, gotta tell the crown. Green Sally up, green Sally down. Last gun start, gotta tell the crown.
Is this a Moby song?
I guess so. Anyway, I kind of like it. Maybe I should listen to Moby. The very most popular song by him is Porcelain, which we play all the time. And then there's a really steep cliff for my Moby knowledge, meaning I know no other songs at all. So this was this most second popular song on Spotify called Flower.
Well, I after I was done just, you know, after I was done overcoming my knee-jerk reactions to everything, yesterday, I decided to really try to climb to the top of the mountain by driving to Silver Lake and going to Little Pine, which is the restaurant that Moby started, which is vegan. I don't think I've ever intentionally gone to a vegan restaurant. And, you know, I think that Moby is an interesting character to me because I think he's somebody, I don't know the guy, but I get the sense that he's really on the right side of a lot of issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, treat animals better and, like, let's take some time to, like, be present and let's drink some tea. Like, he's got, like, an organic – or at one time he had, like, some kind of organic tea shop. And this restaurant, all the proceeds go to sort of causes that try to help animal welfare. So it's like he – and, that song you just played is pretty good. That Porcelain song, I dig – like, why is it that – why do we have a problem – well, I don't want to say we. What is it about Moby that's almost a little comical? Like, when I realized he had a restaurant in L.A. on the plane on Monday, I tweeted, I'm really excited to go to Moby's vegan restaurant. Don't at me. And people responded because I think a lot of us kind of have the same feeling. Like, what's up with that dude? But then if you, like, break down what he's really about, it's all good stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I've ever gone hard on him because actually – I mean, I know so little about Moby, but – it does seem like he could be a stereotype of himself, but I think I met him at KUOW a long, long time ago. He's just in for an interview. I don't even know if it was in for a local interview or he was using our studio or what. And I met him briefly, and I think he was really nice. Does he have a reputation for being kind of standoffish? Because my recollection was he was actually a really sweet guy.
Yes.
And then ever since then, I was like, oh, yeah, he's a really sweet guy who has conviction. And, you know, I like that.
Yeah. I think what it is that he, because he has conviction, he occasionally will, like, not put up with bullshit that – because he probably has boundaries. So there's probably been some times where he has decided to not do a certain project or be involved in some kind of a thing. And it reads as he's like being hard to work with or he's being whatever. But not unlike me with these beautiful influencers. It's probably us on some level assuming something about Moby that's probably not true about his personality or about him as a person. Because, yeah, it's very funny. We've both independently met him randomly. And I will say that when I talked to him, he was very nice, too. So
can I just I think of him as an Ed Begley Jr. Like,
wow.
I'll go with him. I mean, that
bringing
he's
the begs into this.
Yeah, it really begs the question.
Oh.
I believe
I can't find that.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
Because like I like using him as kind of a stand-in as a joke for a kind of stereotypical electric car driving whatever kind of guy. But it doesn't mean I don't like him. I love Ed Begley Jr., you know?
See, to me, I think Ed Begley Jr., because of his role on Arrested Development, I kind of love him.
Yeah.
The one who – this is – why am I doing this right now? Let's talk about Moby. Let's not talk about – you know who's also really into that kind of that sort of – because Ed Begley Jr. is famous for – his house is like one of those like it uses like no power. It's carbon – it's like it's completely whatever, carbon neutral. It's neutral everything. Like it uses the sun and – the rain and the wind or something, right? Like, did you read that New York Times profile of his house?
That all rings a bell. I don't think I read the whole profile. It would have stuck with me more. But I just generally know that that is the life that he lives. And he is both kind of like the poster boy for that, the stereotype of that, but also kind of he has a great sense of humor about it, I think.
Yes, exactly. And in that interview, in whatever interview I'm thinking of, he was just lovely about it. Like, they were really going hard on his kind of like, dude, you are like – like you're ridiculous, you know, that you go to these lengths, because the lengths are just, they're quite something at his house. And he was like, took it all in really good spirits. Like he wasn't like mad. Now who takes it in less good spirits in my reading experience is Bill Nye, the science guy. This is the thing I was just trying to stop myself from saying. I've never worked with him, but we've had him on some programs and things like that. Not a cuddly, warm guy.
Yeah.
Not, it's interesting to me that he's parlayed, and he is smart, and I like that he speaks scientific truth to power. A guy who got a start in Seattle, who was on Almost Live. I mean, he's gone really far.
He was at Almost Live. I didn't know that.
Did you know that?
No.
That's literally where he got his start.
His media start, I guess.
Yes. And I thought he was great when I was a kid, and he was on Almost Live. And he would act in some sketches, if I remember right. But then he was Bill Nye. I think he was Bill Nye the Science Guy even then. Then he had some PBS show, and now he sort of parlayed it into this. You know, he's a very famous guy now. He also has a house that's like very. It's because he's such a logical, smart person. He recognizes, hey, we should all try to like do our part to not ruin the earth as fast as possible. And so he has a house like that. But I remember him being interviewed probably also by the New York Times about his house. And he didn't have any of the warmth and love of Ed Begley Jr. He did have both of his eyebrows. So that's a difference.
Also, that's surprising because he was like a children's host. You know, Bill Nye the Science Guy. I mean, it's hard to remember him pre-internet sort of. Like that is one guy who the internet really seemed to change as far as his career or how I think of him or his reputation. Like, and you say like he's known for speaking scientific truth to power. But like he was growing up, he was just this children's science guy, you know, like he just hosted a children's show.
Because this is the theme of the day, some of this might be my own preconceived notions that I bring to it, which are these. Bill Nye is from Seattle, or at least made his name in Seattle. I grew up watching him on Almost Live, and there was a brief period of time where we were maybe almost equally famous, which is to say neither of us were that famous. And then he rocketed into the stratosphere, and I was always working on things where either I was a producer or then a host. And it was like, oh, we should get Bill Nye on. And to me, it was like, yeah, picking up the phone and calling, you know, It's just somebody from, like, calling Sir Mix-a-Lot or something. Somebody from Seattle who was, like, moderately famous but should be very gettable.
Mm-hmm.
And he was never gettable. And I was, I think it just bothered me on a level that has nothing to do with him, if you know what I mm-hmm. mean. Like, I was just kind of like, really, Bill Nye? You're mm-hmm. not going to come on Ross and Burbank?
Mm-hmm.
Or you have a window of 5 minutes to be on Ross and Burbank? Like, are you too good for us? Have you dropped your Australian accent? What are you doing? So, that's a callback to a recent show where we talked about Aussies being sad that their stars lose their Australian accents. But I want to make sure the listeners know I don't think Bill Nye has an Australian accent.
Gotcha.
So Moby's Restaurant, Little Pine, let me just jump to the end of things. It was delicious, Andrew. I felt a little, when I walked in, I didn't have a reservation, but I was there at like, I'm such an old man now. I was there, I swear to God, I was there at like 5:15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with his restaurant, but let me just talk to you quickly about, and I think LA is the sort of locus for this very modern and very weird phenomenon, and it's especially bad in Los Angeles, and it is the wazification of our cities. And by that I mean, I know I've kind of mentioned this in passing on the show, but it was in its most extreme form last night. Let me explain. We get done with the shoot in Hollywood. And I put into the phone, like, take me to your leader. Moby is the leader of the phones, by the way. A lot mm-hmm. of people don't know that. And so I, like, take me over to this restaurant, and Waze says, okay. And it just then sets me about on maybe 30 or 40 of the tiniest, windiest roads that can only let one car pass at a time that are not lit by streetlights. At this point, it's already dark. And all these roads, Andrew, are jammed with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, these are all people that are on Waze or one of these other mapping apps right now. And those mapping apps are routing everyone through these small, tiny streets. But the problem is they're not set up for it. And so it's a major cluster. And the roads are for everyone. We all pay for them. We all get to use them. I'm not saying that, like, if you live in a certain neighborhood, you deserve to have no one drive on those streets. But I would be kind of bummed if I lived on what used to be a quiet street, and now from, like, 3 in the afternoon until whenever, it's just choked with traffic. I think L.A. is unique for this because, like, New York City, there just aren't a ton of back roads. New York is a kind of a grid pattern, or at least Manhattan is, and it just is what it is. But with a town like L.A., there are like 80 million roads, and there's like 50 major ones, and then there's 80 million minus 50 is all the side streets, and those are all now being used because the software is like, oh yeah, this is the way to go. But it's actually – the other problem with it is the robot doesn't know how hard it is to re-merge onto Beverly – to take a left on Beverly across traffic at 5:30 in the afternoon, if you know what I'm saying.
I thought it's supposed to get – I thought they were getting better at that because that was always a huge thing. That was like
yesterday.
The big Waze thing. Like you it's like, yeah, it's the quickest route if you can take a unprotected left-hand turn on Wilshire or whatever, which you cannot do with no light, right? And so that was always a complaint. And I thought that the app itself was – or like, you know, the programmers were addressing that. I do know that the neighbors were trying because of these just cluster fucks in the small neighborhoods like you're talking about. I know the neighbors were trying to fight ways every way possible, including like going out every afternoon and reporting like fake accidents and stuff outside their house.
I remember hearing about that.
Right.
That's actually pretty hilarious. Well, I mean, it's like it's a weird thing because I think I would have personally been okay in this case. It would have been okay for me if it took me longer to get where I was going. I was having like agita every time I would come down some tiny windy street, like, you know, and I get to Hyperion or whatever like street whatever major arterial I was now going to have to cross.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the Israelites, like Moses, can you part this or something?
Right.
This is, and then I'd get across it, like, okay, oh God. And then I'd be like going down some other tiny, windy back road. I'd be like, this doesn't end well. I know this. I'm going to have to try to cross another major street where no one's going to let me do it. So anyway, I managed to get over to Moby's restaurant. I get there. I check in. I said, yeah, I'm here. I'm by myself. I feel weird eating in a restaurant by myself if I'm not sitting at the bar. Hmm. So I was like, do you have a bar? And she goes, no, we don't. Or I said, can I just have a seat at the bar? I'm just by myself. And she said, I can get you a table. And I was like, that's great. But I go, but is there a bar? Can I just sit there? Something about sitting at a bar eating alone feels normal to me. And sitting at a table, a whole table, feels a little much. And the woman said, this is the bar. You're at it. And I was like at the host station. So I was like, okay, got it. So she goes, right over there is a table. And I go, great. She goes, but it's there's someone who has it reserved in 1 hour. Do you think you can be done by then? She said it in a nice way. She was very nice. But I was like, I think so. But then, of course, I started feeling a little stressed. Like,
yeah.
I've never taken more than an hour to eat. But I was also like, was this going to be the one time? The idea that I had a ticking clock, I was a little stressed about. But
and you don't know like how long it's going to take them to bring the food out. Like then you're just kind of like even just planting that idea. I'm with you. It doesn't take a full hour, but then it just plants the idea. And now it's just like it just especially when it's a destination restaurant like this. That's a special occasion.
Right. Well, yeah. So I sat down and I told myself like it's a kind of a cute little place. It's small. It was sort of dimly lit. It would be a great place to go on a date. Let me tell you. It's a good place to eat by yourself. It'd be probably a better place to be with friends or loved ones. But I'm sitting there and I look over the menu. It's also the kind of place where I think the service was great, but they're not obsequious. Mm-hmm. Like they're like the Mobys of servers. They mm-hmm. have their boundaries. And they're just like they're going to come out and they're going to be professional, but they're not like they're not kneeling down. They're not asking they're not offering you the special on the fajita shooters. It's like there's no flair. Like, it's not that kind of place. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, looking over the menu, and they come, and they take my order, and I'm just waiting, and I'm telling myself, don't look on your phone. I'm like, you're in this vegan restaurant. It's, like, and there's nice ambiance. Don't light this place up with your phone. Just think your thoughts, and just be here now. And so I do that for 45 seconds, and
ooh,
then I get
God,
my phone out.
How was it? How was the 45 seconds?
Rough.
Yeah.
Rough.
Yeah, sounds bad.
Yeah, I'm still not totally recovered from it. So, of course, I eventually do get my phone out because I have nothing to read. There was a gift shop behind the host, and I was like, maybe I was going to ask her, can I borrow one of Moby's books? Like, there were books about Moby. There was something called, like, Destroyed Moby? I don't know what it is. I just saw the spine of it. But I was like, is this a library? May I borrow one of these books and read them and then put it back? I don't want to own a book called Destroyed Moby, but I would read it right now because I'm kind of bored. So then I get my phone out, and there's no Wi-Fi, which part of me was like, is Moby jamming this signal right now? Like intentionally? That seems on brand.
You mean there's no cell service?
No cell service. Okay. No signal. And yeah, no service, I guess. And I'm like, I'm got like one bar, and I'm like, I think this is Moby doing this. I think he's here to teach me about being present by not letting my cell phone work. So then I'm like, do they have Wi-Fi? So then I go to they do have Wi-Fi, but it's locked. And I do not want to ask Moby's servers what the Wi-Fi code mm-hmm. is at the vegan restaurant, because then I'm really outing myself. I am, for the record, looking at my phone under the table.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to keep it like I have on its dimmest setting under the table.
So this is a pretty dim restaurant, even at 5 o'clock.
Yes.
Okay.
Or I'm just getting old, because I had to use the candle.
To read the menu?
There's a candle on the table, and it didn't quite – I was able to do it, but I was like, God, I wish I had one of those owls that they – I don't mean like the Guardians of Legend. I mean like those magnifying glasses with a light on them that you see advertised during – like Forensic Files. I was like, I could – like I get why people – are like bring lights to like flashlights to restaurants to read the menu. That's, I guess this is growing up. So anyway,
get yourself one of those couple of catheters. You're good for the night.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything Wilfred Brimley is the spokesperson for, I'm pretty much down for. So anyway, I'm trying to get into the Wi-Fi. I made a joke on Twitter. I was like, my guess was, I tried to write out kind of what I think the lyrics of that Porcelain song are, which we talked about yesterday, the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, I guess that. I'm out of ideas. I thought some people might tweet at me their ideas for what the password would be. But what I realized was the tweet didn't go out till I left the restaurant because there was no coverage.
Oh, right.
So anyway, the food came and it was so good, Andrew. I got some broccoli with kind of a romesco sauce. I got this potato and leek soup that was amazing, and I got some smashed potatoes, which, let's be honest, they're just delicious potatoes that were fried. But it was great, and I didn't have any sense of like, oh man, I wish I was having a steak with this. Like, I don't know, maybe this is just temporary. I have not had, you know, it's been a couple months since I've eaten very much meat. I had Din Tai Fung, and I also had I had turkey at Thanksgiving. But generally, I've been not eating meat, and I'm really not missing it. And this restaurant was delicious to me, and I did not feel unsatisfied at all. So, of course, I then went, because this is how my brain works, I was like, okay, now I eat at vegan restaurants. This is me now. This is my life. So I go on my phone when I'm back at the hotel, and I look up vegan restaurants in Bellingham, and the first one that comes up is the Steakhouse at the Casino. And I'm like, this is pretty far off, Yelp. It's literally called the Steakhouse. And I'm like, it's in the name, Yelp.
Right. How are you?
How's that the top? And what I realized was, when you're listing your restaurant with Yelp, you can write vegetarian or vegan friendly in the metadata.
Oh, right.
Which is like, well, of course, I mean, there are very few restaurants that aren't vegetarian friendly if people are willing to have a glass of water.
And a bun.
Every restaurant becomes vegetarian friendly if you lower your standards for what you will eat. And so what I realized was literally every restaurant in Bellingham is listed as a vegetarian or vegan restaurant,
mm-hmm.
because they have that as an option if you're willing to have like nothing very satisfying. But anyway, the food was really, really good.
What'd you get?
And I would highly recommend it to people if you're in town.
What'd you get?
I got broccoli. I got – so here's the thing. I don't know. This is probably super boring, but I – what I was trying – like, so it's vegan. So they have a lot of kind of like things that are like pastas that have cheese, but the cheese is not made, you know, with dairy. It's made out of probably crushed up nuts or something else. And I've heard that actually that these restaurants can make some pretty good stuff, some pretty convincing stuff. But I kind of thought, you know, I don't know. If I'm going to eat mac and cheese, personally, I'm just going to eat real mac and cheese. I don't think I want to eat mac and constructed vegan cheese, delicious though it might be. So I tried to get stuff that I thought was not pushing the envelope of what can be created without like the basic things we think of. In other words, I didn't want to get too much fakey stuff. I'm also because I can't do anything 5%, Andrew. Everything has to be like I just whipsaw between total decadence and total restraint. What I've been reading, and then I read in that Michael Pollan book, is a lot of the fake meat stuff is actually so engineered and kind of weird to try to make it taste like mm-hmm. meat that it's. I mean, it's good that you didn't kill an animal for it, but if you're trying to do this for health reasons, it's also maybe not the world's greatest.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so – and that's not – I don't think that's what they're serving at this place. But just generally speaking, I'm not going around eating like every fake meat I can. I'm trying to retrain my brain and my palate to just be like, hey, vegetables, those are good. And if those are sautéed in some nice garlic, that's a thing. And that can be satiating. And so anyway, that's why I wanted to get some broccoli. I didn't want to just order a bunch of – like they have a fake burger, I think, and they have a like all this decadent food that just doesn't have meat in it. But I was like, no, let me try to keep it like sort of simple. So I got the broccoli. I got this soup that was amazing. And I got these smashed potatoes, which like you can't go wrong with fried delicious potatoes. And so – and it was great. And then the other thing I did – I know that the show has just turned into me reciting moderately good decisions I made. But another thing that has – and you and I talked about this right when I started to get on my Michael Pollan kick of late, which is not finishing every bite of my food. And here's what I have started doing. This isn't in the book. This is just a Burbank life hack. I will – when I start to get full, I will like – I will stop and I will say, am I starting – am I feeling full right now? And I will look at my watch. Last night it was – I looked at my watch and it was – I think by the time this happened, it was 6:12 p.m. And I said, I'm starting to feel full. There's still a whole bowl of these smashed potatoes, but I've now eaten all this stuff. I feel I'm basically what I could feel was I could feel the car starting to come to a stop. Like, and I was like, it's now whatever, 6:12. I was like, I'm going to wait till 6:15. See how I feel. Because I still wanted to eat because it was delicious. And I'm in the mode of just always of just horf it. Eat every single bite. Particularly, I'm at Moby's Vegan Restaurant. I'm paying for this. It's like, why not? By 6:15, I felt so full. I couldn't eat another bite.
Mm-hmm.
There's something for me about this timing it thing, like almost making it a research project. Because the other part of it is, hey, if I'm still hungry at 6:15, go for it. Like, I'm not trying to deny myself, but I'm trying to actually figure out what are the real implications of how much food I've put in my body on a particular moment. And it's – I did this – I've only done this a few times, but it's like something about the – like, I don't know if it's the research angle, but just being like, okay, let's see how this feels in 3 minutes. And then having the – totally reserving the right to eat everything I want if I'm still hungry in 3 minutes. It has not made me feel like I'm depriving myself, but man, I'm feeling – I'm moving a little better and feeling a little lighter in the water just from not having so much food in my stomach at all times.
Yeah, I think a huge thing for everybody – and the funny thing is like I'm overweight and I eat too much junk, but like I'm not even a food person. Like people like me who aren't necessarily food people, and then the people who do love food – there's so much tied up in eating that isn't just about, like, when am I full? Like, eating is so much more than that. I mean, obviously, I don't have to – I'm not an anthropologist, and you don't have to be an anthropologist to know that. But, like, for me, it's kind of like, oh, at the end of the day, I mentioned I went to watch Monday Night Football at the corner bar recently at the Westie, which kind of had – whatever. They have all kinds of pub food that they like to think is a little bit
better.
That's
home of the liquid wings, right?
The liquid wings? Yeah, they just,
you say you slurp down your wings.
Yeah. No, they ran the old wings in a cup, got out of business. and you know, first of all, so it was that moment. I was super hungry. I waited too late to go there. But then for me, it was like that moment where I get my beer and my wings and my waffle fries and the game is on. And like, how many of those wings do I actually need to, give myself enough energy to get through the evening and the day? You know what I mean? And like, if I were to time myself, of course it'd be different. But that's not what it was about. It was about the entertainment aspect of that food. And by the way, you want to talk about the total opposite of your feeling. It was one of those things where usually you can get a half order or a full order, right? A full order of wings is a pound, which is probably about 10 wings. So I usually get a full order of wings. But it was happy hour. And so they say, hey, it's happy hour, so it's better if you get two half orders. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And I knew what was going to happen in my head. And this is where I get so in my head about this shit. I'm sitting at this bar by myself. I'm at the corner of the bar. There's a Washington R Words fan to my right. There's some Seattle Microsofty looking guy to my left. And I'm like, because I ordered.
Oh, clowns to the left of you. Microsofties to the right.
Coders to the right.
clowns to the left of me. Coders to the right.
Write that down.
100% the show.
Write that
down. Okay,
will
do.
And I'm like, I ordered, even though it's usually one order of wings for me, because I ordered off the menu and it's two, that's going to come out on two separate plates. I know it. And I had ordered some tater tots instead of waffle fries this time, and that's going to come on a separate plate. And I started getting anxious about it, and sure as shit, the waitress comes out, and she puts out all three plates in front of me, and I get hot in my face. I make a joke. I'm like, oh my God, this is a lot of food. And like, I'm kind of like, I just feel so embarrassed for ordering three plates of food. In another situation, if this all came out on one plate, it probably wouldn't even be that much, at least by American standards. But like, I just felt like so ashamed. So then I'm eating this meal that I'd been looking forward to, my junk food meal that I'd been looking forward to. But then I'm so full of like whatever kind of disorder is going through my head, and I feel like everybody is watching me and thinking, look at the fat guy eat his three plates of food. And then that kind of experienced it. And then like, I had to make 17 more jokes to the server, the bartender, about like, oh yeah, take this shame away from me, right? Like,
oh,
to clear
man.
My plate. It's just
that
like
feeling.
That feeling of just kind of like you're trying to like I don't even know what I was trying to do, but it's just such a my relationship with food. Man, the more you talk about what's going on in your life, and then I compare it to mine, like my relationship with food is not healthy.
Well, I really hope that I'm worried about this actually. That I hope I'm not coming off. I'm really trying to not come off as super preachy or like, hey, everyone should be doing this the way that I'm currently doing it. Because if the longtime listeners of the show know, if there's one thing that I do, it's jump on fad behaviors and then jump off them as quickly as I got on. So I am. But I'm also kind of going through a lot of personal changes, and it's very like at the front of my brain, and I'm just having all these new experiences, and it's sort of hard for me to not talk about them on the show. But I also really, and I won't – well, I'll try to not be offended if you ever check in with me, Andrew, and you're like, okay, bro, enough. Like if people want this shit, they can listen to Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work afternoon or whatever. Like I'm not trying to tell anyone else how they need to live their life or what they should do. I guess part of what I'm reporting on all of this is, or part of why is because, like, I was saying yesterday that for me, it's like even something as simple as just not driving past the Tattletale while listening to the Lost in Translation soundtrack was growth. And then it's like doing something different than how I normally do it and realizing I'm still alive has been really powerful for me. And realizing, like, so that's me at the Moby restaurant, like, oh, broccoli. I'm excited about broccoli, and then eating it and being like, okay. And then, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm quite surprised by these little moments I'm having. And so that's part of why I'm talking about them. And I would never tell you that you shouldn't eat your wings. I would say,
would you say I shouldn't slurp my wings?
Hey, I mean, if you got the diapers, I've got the time.
That's the best drop of TV Tale history.
Take that comment out to its logical extension, it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Not the look who's talking, but me referencing diapers and your hot wings. No, but I guess what I'm trying to say, without being preachy or I sound like I'm trying to life coach you, one thing, well, first of all, the question of like your insecurity around the food coming out, that's obviously its own thing. But what I'm that you just will either deal with or live with or whatever. I have no useful information on that. But as far as the fact that you do always often say to me, I ate so much food, which I've ate with you many, many times. You do not eat an excessive amount of food. You do not like you're not Andrew versus food or anything. Like, I think that is also, I think, just a lot of it is in your own head. But you might, maybe not on your special wings meal, but another time, you might experiment with this thing I'm talking about where you just stop yourself a little earlier and just give it 4 minutes and just see how you feel. Because I'm just talking about my experience now. I'm not enjoying the meals less, and I'm not even feeling smug when I walk away. I'm just feeling the right amount of full.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been kind of surprising to me, because I am, like, growing up the way I grew up, I always say, like, you know, it wasn't that we didn't have enough food. We did not grow up, you know, hungry. But there wasn't enough of the good food ever, like, with seven kids. And by that I mean our dinners were usually a weird melange of, like, just randomness. Like, hey, here's some nachos, and then here's two thawed-out pork chops, and then here's one roast beef sandwich from Arby's, $5 for $5 from yesterday, and a half a burrito because mom and dad went to Azteca because they had a coupon in the entertainment book.
Woohoo!
Have at it! And it would just be like, or if we'd go out to dinner, I was always very obsessed with what's the, you know, just trying to get, like, my hands on whatever the most edible food around was, and what was, which usually probably meant the most fast foody, the most trans fatty, the most delicious to me, which was probably the actually worst food there. But anyway, and so I have had this weird scarcity, even though I'm an adult who can afford lots of food now, not to brag. I eat like a Chilean miner who's just emerged from underground, from 3 months underground. And that's a big part of my enjoyment, is eating fast. I told you when Camaro, Kev, and I were at Din Tai, I literally ordered another thing of Shaolong Bao, and I was like, and make it snappy, good sir, because I wanted to eat it before my stomach figured out I was full.
Right, yeah.
What the F?
Yeah.
Like, I knew I was going to feel uncomfortable later, but I was like, not today, body.
Isn't that an Irish, like, toast? Like, may the food be digested 20 minutes before you realize you're full? Do you have an idea of what? We had one of those old-fashioned wooden bottle openers on this, like, outbuilding we had on our property growing up. That's kind of a almost abandoned, ratty building. But it was some, like, Southern Comfort. Why would Southern Comfort have an old Irish cheers on it? But it did, and it said, may you be in heaven a half hour before the devil knows you're dead. So right. I was riffing on something from my childhood that nobody knows about.
May the wings rise to meet you.
Yes.
And the waffle fries be always at your back. Let's talk about this. You know what? First, though, let's talk about these donors of the day, my friend. And I can play my special music from here, or would you rather play it from your end?
I don't know if I have the – do I have the kind of jazzy thing that you like to
play?
Do
you have some – well, I like – you know, can you play the song you played yesterday? It's kind of your go-to.
Is it the Thank You Baby? I got this one that's just, like, dialed up in my
– I dig.
It's the Shirelles.
Thank you, baby.
Let's thank our donors of the day, generous, wonderful supporters of this program. They donated before their bank account knew they were doing it, and we thank them for that because it's how we do the show. Melissa Zazik of Seattle, Washington. Am I doing the wrong thing there?
What are you doing wrong?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to either leave off the S or the Z.
Oh, the pronouncer.
I'm
still trying to get into the spreadsheet. The further down the spreadsheet we go, the longer it takes my computer to kind of load. I think so. Hold on. I'm almost there. I'm in December. Okay. Wow. Yeah. A lot of consonants here.
If I go with, if I go with the great basketball player, Wally Szczerbiak.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those ones where you drop the S and you emphasize the Z. So using the Wally Szczerbiak principle, I'm going to go with Melissa Zosik.
Can we also thank Wally Szczerbiak? I mean, he didn't donate to the show.
When he played for Miami of Ohio, they beat the University of Washington in the NCAA tournament. And broke my damn heart.
Oh, of course. I remember that. That was huge day
for me, too. We got
Zerbed. You got Zerbed. How is that not a show title?
Wow. I know. Today we got a lot. Lee Lambert of Shoreline, Washington. We love Lee.
Lee? Sorry, I was distracted for a second.
We love Lee's family.
Lee!
Lee's daughter was deeply suspicious of the 2 years ago picnic, or just suspicious of us at the picnic, mm-hmm. but we appreciate them nonetheless. Thanks, Lee. Brittany Pendergraft of Mukilteo, Washington. Caitlin Berry of Chicago, Illinois. Michelle Melnar of Houston, Texas. And then Brooks Wilson of Boise, Idaho. Anytime we have a Boise, Idaho person, I wonder if they are part of the crew that hosted us on our cross-country journey.
I'm going to get in trouble here. I don't think we met Brooks, but I do think that Brooks – I feel like I've definitely had interactions with Brooks before, but I don't think it was on the cross-country road trip. If I'm wrong about that, Brooks, I'm sorry. Send me an email, and that'll rekindle our relationship.
Brooks, thank you so much for supporting the show. Thanks to Michelle, Caitlin, Brittany, Lee, and Melissa as well.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, I guess I'll activate the top story sounder. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of time for this.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
But I do want to just quickly, you sent this to me last night and you were like, is this a show topic? And I was like, yes, it is. It also seems very connected to the whole Moby vegan restaurant conversation. So this was a tweet, I guess, that PETA sent out.
Yeah, and I got to give credit to. I just saw this because PJ Vogt of the TLDR.
A Reply All.
Reply All, yes. I'm the only person who accidentally calls Reply All, like literally probably the most popular podcast on the planet. I still call it TLDR.
No, if you. I would have. That's what I would have called it too, honestly. So PETA sent out this tweet that said, stop using anti-animal language. And so they listed a bunch of things that we all sort of say, and then they gave us the alternatives. I think there's a real conversation to be had around the language we use. I mean, think about this. We've changed where we should be anyway, changing the language we use to describe people left and right. And it always feels a little different at first and maybe challenging, but I think we mostly look back on it and say, yeah, that was a good call. Thank God we did that. So this also feels weird and silly to me, but I don't know. 10 years, will we say, oh, God, this makes more sense? The actual examples, though, for me, I think are going to be very difficult to just reflexively integrate. So I mentioned this at the top of the show. Instead of kill two birds with one stone, they would propose feed two birds with one scone.
Which is really... I mean, that is the charm of this list. The other ones, I don't know if this would get the traction it got without feed two birds with one scone. Because that, I mean, they just start with that shit. They start with that. Like, that is amazing.
A little role playing, like, okay, Andrew, we've got this project coming up, and I think it actually could do a couple of things. It could really raise some money for TBTL, and I think it would be really cool for the listeners. Like, kind of feed two birds with one scone.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Kind of a thing. Did that feel natural?
That worked for me. I actually, by the way, we have to get through their list, and I know we're short on time. I put together a list of some other alternates, too.
You did?
Yeah, just they're not great, but I wanted to share them with you as well.
We'll be the guinea pig. They want you to say be the test tube.
So like God, yeah. I don't know. Charlie's got this new bubblegum flavor he wants us to try down in R&D. I guess I could be the test tube on that.
Ooh, that sounds gross to
me. Yeah, there's something that doesn't match about that one.
Is the assumption that the guinea pig was the guinea pig is being used in animal experimentation? I guess I never really thought of it, but maybe guinea pigs have been used for that or something. Be the test tube. Beat a dead horse. I don't mean to beat a dead horse here. Feed a fed horse. I don't mean to feed a fed horse here. I'd like to, if we can, ask this horse to stop eating about 5 minutes before it thinks it's full.
I got to say, this one, I first read it, I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. And then I started thinking about it more today. I'm like, no, that actually... It does. It really – I like this one because it really – I've totally come around on this list. At first, I thought it was funny. Now I just love it. It's really – it sticks to it. It's like, what does beat a dead horse mean? It means we've been over this over and over and over again. We're not getting any further. We're just beating a dead horse. It's done. Let's move on. Feeding a fed horse totally fit, like, as far as the meaning. It's like, this horse is fed. Stop feeding the fed horse. Let's move on and talk about Gary's special bubble gum. I'm tying them all together now. I don't think
I love it.
Care.
I love it. That's really
so. I like
that's
feed
really
a
good.
Fed horse. I'm gonna actually
I do
try
too.
To start using these.
It's alliterative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will say this: you're gonna be explaining what the hell you're talking about to people for the next 20 years if you try to ever casually use this in conversation. Like, there's no way you're saying feed two birds with one scone to a normal person. That's not stopping the conversation.
But I want to try it. This next one, I got some real feelings about because I kind of
okay.
Love
I'll
it.
Do the All I'll right. do the typical one, and then why don't you okay. lay the PETA suggested alternative okay. version on us? So if I said Andrew. I'm out here, man. I'm doing all my jobs, but I got to bring home the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
That would be changed, too.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean, Luke, to say that you bring home the bagels?
I can't even hit my bell. It's not the water.
Okay, here's the deal. This is probably my favorite on the list that I would actually see myself using. Just like, yeah, I got to say, like, I have a pretty good job with TBTL, but everybody knows that Genevieve really brings home the bagels. Like, I like that. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I think nobody would know. If somebody heard that in conversation, I don't think they would stop the conversation. They might just, like, think, oh, that's funny. But I was thinking, now this is Andrew Brain here. This is going to get some real weird territory, okay?
Okay.
Do you think that if you said it to somebody, or let's just say that you're talking to a Jewish couple that you've just met at a party, do you think that they would be somewhat put off? Like, is this a hint of anti-Semitism? Like, let's just say that the conversation is, I just met this couple and, you know, he's a stay-at-home dad and she works at Amazon, and be like, well, I guess you bring home the bagels. Like, wouldn't,
right.
and you know, they're a Jewish couple.
Well, let me
couldn't
tell
you see them?
Would, yeah, absolutely. That could – I don't know if they thought that through, but no, you're totally right. If you said it to a non-Jewish couple, there would be no implication. But if you said it to a couple where one or both of them, particularly the person who's bringing home what was previously known as the bacon – although think about how potentially offensive it is to say to a Jewish couple, you're bringing home the bacon.
That's a good point, too.
There's just a lot of subtext to all of these things, I guess. But yeah,
especially when I say to them, I'm talking to the man in the schmear. Like, then it's really like, what are you doing? That's my whole
schmear. And then last but not least, let's Andrew. We just got to take the bull by the horns here. would be changed in PETA's world, too.
Oh, do you mean we need to take the flower by the thorns?
Okay, that one, I have to argue, I would say probably that and be the test tube.
Yeah.
How about we just don't say take the bull by the horns and don't say be the
yeah.
The alternatives that are proposed that are not better than the original. And I would like but man, you're right, Andrew. I think I've arrived at the same place that you're at, where it's so much funnier to say feed two birds with one scone.
I love that. Yes. And then, like, I don't even use the original expression that much, but I want to start. Here's the list I came up with. I was doing this for the newsletter, but it looks like we're going to have some other newsletter content this week, so I need to do it on the show. How about instead of curiosity killed the cat, we got curiosity chilled the cat? Because it's still, I mean, it's not great for the cat, but it's not, you know, at least the cat's still alive.
Sure.
Instead of I don't have a dog in this fight, you could say, I don't have a Doug on this flight. Like, you're just kind of like, your coworkers are arguing about something. They turn to you, what do you think? Don't look at me, man. I don't even have a Doug on this flight. I think that could actually work.
That's solid, man. That's really good.
This one is, those are probably the best. These start to stretch a little bit. Instead of hold your horses, hold your Gorsuch. I don't know. It was getting near showtime, and I just needed to get something out there.
Well, it brings up some painful memories because then, of course, I'm forced to think of Merrick Garland.
Of course.
I don't know why.
Right.
I mean, really,
and he was really
Garland.
Held. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right. We want to keep it accurate.
Yeah.
Block your Garlands. Makes no sense, but it's... Oh, God. Okay.
Like a fish out of water. Again, going with a person, like a Phelps out of water. I think that's good.
Oh,
or you could say like a U.S. Olympic swimmer, Michael Phelps, out of water. But I would just say like a Phelps out of water, because you can take him out of the water and he's still going to survive. He would prefer to be
but
in water at all
times. You can't take the water out of Phelps.
No, you can't.
I mean, that's the irony of that whole situation.
And then,
I like that. Like a Phelps out of water.
And then the one I was honestly really struggling with before we get in here, this is not a good power out, because I was trying to think what would be good for ants in your pants, and I couldn't think of anything. Do you have dirt in your skirt, or do you have itches in your britches? Like, those are the two that I came up with, but I feel
you have dirt
bad.
In your McGirt?
Yeah. Settle down. What do you got, question? Dirt in your McGirt? I kind of like that.
See, now the thing about ants in your pants is, I mean, the ants might be living their best life.
That's a good point.
Like the premise of these, I guess, is, you know, because if you look at all of these things, these are all negatives for the animals. But maybe ants in your pants, I mean, that might be the... You know, the pants might be Hawaii to ants.
That is true.
There's so much to eat and carry inside these pants.
I'm sorry, you just heard me say, oh, because I forgot. I did come up with one right before the show started. I told it to Vive, and she laughed. And she's a tough audience. Instead of a wolf in sheep's clothing, how do you feel about a wife in sheep clothing? Is that workable, or is that complicated?
Is the wife Jewish or not?
Really? Yeah, I guess the company in which you use it. I don't know, man. Ted's just come over here from Microsoft. I don't know. He's still got some connections over there. I think he's a wife in sheep clothing.
That's my wife.
Yeah, that probably doesn't work.
Wife. You're
a
wife in sheep clothing. Oh, man.
Okay. So not an A-plus effort by me, but I think that I
love
got,
them.
You know, I don't have a Doug on this flight. Maybe we can put that into use, if nothing else.
I think you absolutely brought home the bagels with this segment, Andrew.
Thank you.
And I think we've been able to definitely feed two birds with one scone.
Yeah.
In that we discussed the topic and we gave the listeners some new phrases to use out there. So
send me more. I'll bet the listeners are so much better at this than I am. Come up with some more alternative phrases. Maybe we can put in the newsletter next week or share them on the show.
All right. We should wrap this up. Because I am going to be getting out of here, and I know you've got a busy day, Andrew. You're really taking the flower by the thorns today.
Yeah,
on
a few different things. Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll call this good for today's episode.
What is a good song? I feel like we've talked about a lot of animals here.
Well,
the Christmas thing. Do you want to do the Christmas?
In the Christmas thing, I mean, right. I don't know. I am a big fan of the Ray Charles.
Oh, okay.
Winter Wonderland, his version of Winter Wonderland. Oh, by the way, I loved that version of the Beths.
Oh, yes.
That Beths version of.
Yes.
My guess is that and I don't say this to be, like, trying to say the best are being derivative. They're awesome. But it reminded me a little bit of the Pretenders version of that song.
Oh, I don't know.
And I could see a world in which the Beths listened to the Pretenders and were inspired by that. But, oh, man, I love that Merry Little Christmas the version that the Beths did that we played yesterday. That was really good. So thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, that was from Chris. Chris. What? Which Ray Charles? I'm looking at a bunch of his songs here. Which one?
Is it?
Is it Winter Wonderland? For some reason, that's...
It's Winter Wonderland, yes. Well, I hope you all enjoy this Christmas music. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I hope you're able to be here tomorrow morning with us for more Imaginary Radio. We'll be right back here then with that. Until then, let's make sure we're not feeding a fed horse.
Yes, it's true.
Let's. I don't want to say be the test tube because I feel like that one's kind of... Well, anyway, tomorrow we'll have more good suggestions by the listeners, I'm sure. But thanks for listening, everybody. Go Mariners, go Browns, go Seahawks, go eat the bacon. That's not how you say that. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
He's a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in the winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he's Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. But you can do the job if you're down. When it snows, ain't it thrilling? Though your nose get a little chilly, we'll frolic and play the Eskimo way.
Power out.